ಅರುಣಾಚಲ ಭಕ್ತ ಭಗವತ್ ಇನ್ ದಿ ನ್ಯೂಯಾರ್ಕ್ ಅರುಣಾಚಲ ಆಶ್ರಮ ಆನ್ ಮಂಡೇ ಮಾರ್ನಿಂಗ್ ಏಪ್ರಿಲ್ 10th ಅರುಣಾಚಲ ಭಕ್ತ ಭಗವತ್ ಲುಕ್ಡ್ ಆಸ್ ಇಫ್ ಹಿ ವರ್ ಅಸ್ಲೀಪ್ ಆನ್ ಕ್ಲೋಸರ್ ಎಕ್ಸಾಮಿನೇಷನ್ ಇಟ್ ವಾಸ್ ಫೌಂಡ್ ದಟ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಲೈಫ್ ಬ್ರೆತ್ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ಲೆಫ್ಟ್ ದ ಬಾಡಿ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಹಿ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ಲೆಫ್ಟ್ ವಿತ್ ಇಟ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಆಲ್ ಅಪಿಯರೆನ್ಸಸ್ ನೋ ಒನ್ ಕುಡ್ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಗೆಸ್ಟ್ ದಟ್ ಹಿ ವಾಸ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಟು ಡಿಪಾರ್ಟ್ ದ ಪ್ರಿವಿಯಸ್ ನೈಟ್ He was quietly absorbed, listening to both the morning and evening Veda Parayanas, one after the other, then had a meal, smiled and conversed with the ashrama friends who had gathered that night, but showed no signs that this was his final night. Since suffering a stroke 18 months earlier, he had been unable to walk and of course was weak. He would routinely sit in a wheelchair for 5 hours every day, and although functioning in a limited way, he was hardly conscious of his frailty, occasionally forgetting that he was unable to walk. Nevertheless, he remained ever cheerful and grateful, rarely asking for anything other than a warm blanket and to be helped into bed when he was tired. It is 50 years since Bhagavan's Mahanirvana was the last thing he was told before he fell asleep and the lights were dimmed. He nodded his head, closed his eyes, and that was it. We will never look at him who affectionately watched over us through those kind eyes again. Little did we know then that on April 14, exactly 50 years to the day, we would be cremating Bhagavat's physical remains. Once he told us, who knows, this body may go any day. What do I have to show for all these years? What will I leave behind? Have I stopped serving, loving, and worshipping all of you? Every day, I question myself thus, and that is what I want you to remember. When this body goes, that was not his dying message to his friends, but was said 25 years earlier. It was what he wanted us to remember, and it is not difficult to remember this now. For all through the succeeding 25 years, he continued to demonstrate his intense love for all of Sri Bhagavan's devotees, who made their way to the Maharishi's tiniest of abodes in the West, Sri Arunachala Ashrama. He knew that the love that flooded his heart came to him by the blessings of his Guru, Sri Ramana Maharishi, and as that flood inundated his heart, it would overflow in such measure that he longed to deluge the entire creation with it. You are all Sri Bhagavan for me, he would say. He never tired of serving devotees and expressing the joy and happiness that filled every pore of his body. But from all appearances, his ascent on the royal road to realization was not an easy one. Although endowed from birth with a deep faith and natural devotion, he had to struggle at every step, beginning with extricating himself from the quagmire of illiteracy and stagnation in his village. Let us read his own words on this matter. My mother, Srimati Panchadevi, and father, Sriman Girivar Roy, although illiterate, were a very religious and God-fearing couple. I was their youngest child and was brought up in the hope of being given a formal education so that I might be able to read and recite the religious epic poem Ramayana of Goswami Tulsidas, the immortal saint poet of the Hindi language. Thus, my Lord, Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi, inspired my parents to name me Bhagavat, a devotee of the Lord, and to put me under the care of the village teacher so that I might read and learn about the world. From my earliest childhood, I remember being given to contemplation and very serious and deep conversation. That is why the villagers often called me an old man in the body of a child. And I can picture myself as I used to go about the village with a serious countenance and deep purpose. My village was in the backwoods, devoid of even a place of worship. India is a land of God-intoxicated people, and it is very strange that this village could not even build a temple for its residents. To reach my village, one had to make a great effort. No road led to it, and all of us had to walk through fields, farms, floodwaters, and sun-baked lands, and there was every likelihood of losing one's way in the night. Even before reaching the age of 10, Bhagavat became active in the non-cooperation movement of Mahatma Gandhi. This may have disconcerted his older brothers and parents, but Bhagavat was an incorrigible idealist right from his youth. Any high ideal outside the normal pursuits of life invariably captivated his heart and mind, and he would throw his whole being into it with the utmost sincerity and intensity. It happened again when he read the life of Gautama Buddha in upper primary school. As a teenager, his motto became national liberation and self-realization. His zeal for independence landed him in prison when he was 17 years old. His education was interrupted. In spite of financial difficulties, Bhagavat's family was still keen to send him for higher studies. After his release from jail, he completed his high school in Calcutta and then attended the Varanasi Hindu University and finally completed his BA at Patna University in Bihar. He then took employment as a teacher in a Hindi school in Darjeeling, a Himalayan hill station. It was here, about a month before his 29th birthday, he first read the Hindi version of A Search in Secret India. The moment his eyes fell on the photo of Sri Maharishi, he wanted to fly to his abode at Arunachala. He writes, "Near around 10th October 1941, I received the book Gupt Bharat Ki Khoj, a Hindi translation of Paul Brunton's book A Search in Secret India. I did not know about the book, but had simply come across an advertisement of it in a Hindi magazine. I must have been drawn towards it because it contained the stories of seers and sages of India. From the moment the book landed in my hands, I was glued to it, and on finishing it, decided to go down to South India to have darshan of Bhagavan Ramana. I was also, at that time, instinctively drawn towards astrology and was very much impressed with the description in the chapter, written in the stars. As it turned out, I went to Ujjain to learn astrology instead of going to Arunachala for Bhagavan's darshan. Although I spent some time in Ujjain and applied myself to astrology, I never wavered in my devotion to Bhagavan Ramana and tried my best to draw the attention of my teacher to the wonderful sage who was radiating his grace from Arunachala. With my mind's eye, I saw Bhagavan sitting in Arunachala and looking at me. He was pouring his grace on me, but he did not make it possible for me to go to him. Instead, I pursued the study of astrology. Because Darjeeling was considered a security-sensitive area by the British, Bhagavat was not permitted to return there to teach. The authorities had discovered his record of political activity. He then channeled his energy into Gandhi's Quit India movement, but being hard-pressed for income, took several jobs as a journalist with newspapers in Ujjain and Calcutta. As an idealist, Bhagavat was always inspired by the American independence movement of the 18th century and the purest forms of American democratic ideology. A longing in his heart arose to travel to the New World, even though he had no contacts in the West or financial means to make the journey. He somehow intuitively felt his future was linked to America, and no one could dissuade him from this apparently impracticable dream. Only his sister encouraged him by saying, "I do not know where you will find the money to go to America or how you will do it, but you are so intent on going, so sincere in your desire, I believe God will make it possible for you to go." And he did go in 1947, the year India attained independence. He received a fellowship from the University of Iowa, and a sympathetic friend arranged to lend him the money to make the ocean journey. After 2 years in Iowa, he received a master's degree in journalism and began a job as the information officer at the Indian Embassy in Washington, D.C. In accordance with the prevailing custom in India, Bhagavat was married to Yoga Maya Devi when he was just a boy of 17. She was only 8 at the time. Because of his constant moving about for education and to procure an income during his early years, he was unable to stay with her for any lengthy period of time. She joined him in the U.S. only in 1952. They gave birth to their first child in 1953. It was the following year that Bhagavat experienced a dramatic surge in his inner life. On Wednesday, October 13, 1954, I was in the guest cottage of a Quaker couple, Helen and Albert Bailey, Jr., located on their farm in Westchester, Pennsylvania. The cottage was situated in a valley near their residence. On the second floor of the cottage, my wife, Yogamaya, our 15-month-old boy, and I were occupying the large wooden-framed bed that night. In the second half of the night, I saw Bhagavan Ramana sitting on the bed near my head. Although this was a dream, I saw it as clearly as I see the sun during the day, and remember it vividly. His famous figure was near my head, and his legs were dangling. Arunachala Shiva, Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi, stayed near my head for quite a while, so that I could drink deep in him. Bhagavan simply kept on looking at me, and I was filled with joy and happiness and could not turn my eyes away from him. I do not know how long this lasted, but once I woke up, I could not return to sleep and sat on the bed meditating on him. All morning and day, I kept on thinking of the darshan Bhagavan had given me in my dream. That dream enabled the sugar doll to be dissolved into the divine ocean of Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi. Since then, I have not been the same Bhagavat I used to be. The following night, he had another stirring dream wherein he saw the Sanskrit word Upanishad written on a loose leaf. Then the leaves of text began to turn one by one until he woke. These experiences rekindled the fire of devotion to Guru Ramana that was first sparked in 1941. Though the Maharishi had left his body 4 years earlier, Bhagavat began writing letters to him at Sri Ramana Ashramam, as he was beginning to experience him as a living presence. On an invitation to teach in Iowa, Bhagavat resigned from the Indian Embassy in 1957. The teaching position did not materialize and he looked elsewhere for employment. He thought he might teach in a US college, write books and travel, but no promising offers came. He inwardly felt that his master, Sri Ramana, was removing all worldly ambition from his mind and was steadily pulling him deeper into his spiritual center for sustenance. In 1959, Bhagavat, with his family, returned to India. Now he was able to fulfill his long-cherished dream of visiting Ramanashramam in Tiruvannamalai. We returned to India in February 1959. We lived in my village and the world of cold, corrugated cement and concrete was replaced by the village life. We were completely destitute in the true sense of the term. It was a very trying period for all of us, but the grace of Bhagavan kept surging inside me and was the main sustenance of my life. The desire for the darshan of Arunachala Ramana at Sri Ramanashramam remained unquenched within me because I had no money to travel. At about this time, Ram Bagadur, my nephew, was inspired to visit Arunachala and he invited me to accompany him to Sri Ramanashramam in Tiruvannamalai, South India. As soon as we caught the first glimpse of Sri Arunachala, I was swimming in the bliss of Bhagavan. After 19 years, Bhagavan had brought me to his lotus feet. The greatest dream of my life was fulfilled. On December 30th, 1960, Friday morning, Ram Bagadur and I were in Sri Ramanashramam. It was here at Sri Ramanashramam that Arthur Osborne, a staunch devotee, author of several profound books on Bhagavan and founder of the Mountain Path magazine, encouraged Bhagavat to start some regular meetings in the US centered on Sri Maharishi. When he returned, Bhagavat did not know for sure at that time he would return, but he did, taking up a position at the Indian Mission to the United Nations in New York City in 1962. In 1965, Bhagavat, reflecting on the recent events of his life, writes, "Bhagavan made it possible for me to find employment once again in the United States, but New York was the last place we wanted to live. In spite of my best efforts to get away from New York, Bhagavan held me here. He must have some purpose in not helping me find employment elsewhere." The purpose would soon reveal itself. On November 12, 1965, Bhagavat began weekly meetings in a room at the American Buddhist Society on the west side of Manhattan. He wanted it to be a meeting place for sincere aspirants who wished to deepen their spiritual lives in the light of the Maharishi's guidance and grace. In 1966, Arunachala Ashrama, Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi Center, was incorporated and registered as a charity with the state and federal governments. With the renting of a meeting room at 78 St. Mark's Place in 1967, the weekly meetings became daily. In 1969, the ashrama moved to a rented storefront on 342 East 6th Street near 1st Avenue and remained there for the next 17 years. Bhagavat's dream for a country residential ashrama was realized in 1972 when the Nova Scotia, Canada, Arunachala Ashrama was founded at the foot of the rolling hills of the Annapolis Valley. All along, Bhakta Bhagavat would emphasize to all visitors the need for spiritual practice. He would say, "This is Arunachala Abhyasa Ashrama. Abhyasa means spiritual practice." Pointing to Sri Bhagavan's photo, we would often hear him repeat to new visitors, "He teaches and we practice. He has made me his servant and servitor, his doorman and doormat. He was now consumed day and night, dedicating all his time and energy to the ashrama and the constant remembrance or self-abidance, as he would call it. He behaved like a man possessed, living from moment to moment, acting on whatever inspiration entered his heart. Intuition and inspiration were the forces that now motivated his life. The intellect and self-will were losing their hold, and his life began to take its commands from that inner voice spoken by the Lord of his heart. I wander about like a drunken person who does not care what the world thinks of him, as he is oblivious of the physical world in his inebriated state, he wrote in 1966. Bhagavat was a prolific writer. He would say, unless my mind sinks into the heart, I cannot write. And it would sink, and the writing went on and on. All his spare time would be occupied with worshipping at the altar of Herm's 3000 typewriter with the fruits and flowers of my breath. He would be seen either sitting inwardly absorbed in front of the typewriter or outwardly absorbed, typing thousands of pages of what he called prayer manuscripts. In 1970, he began writing a piece titled Bhagavan, Thou Art the Self. This went on for 3,500 pages. From the top of my voice, I declare to the world that Thou art the very breath for me, and day and night I find myself immersed in the surging Ganga of the silent sage of the holy hill of the beacon light, Sri Arunachaleshwara Shiva Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi. Thus, he writes on the last page in 1973, only to begin another piece titled Bhagavan, Thou art my breath. He would never read what he wrote unless asked to. He would make many carbon copies, and when the Xerox machine hit the market, he was the most diligent of customers. He would ask us to send copies to this or that person, thus fulfilling, in his own unique way, the desire to share whatever grace and experience Sri Ramana had blessed him. Openness of heart was a favorite expression of his guilelessness, humility. He would say these are the essential qualities of an aspirant. He longed for the pure company of those rare souls who embodied these qualities. He would travel any distance at any time of day or night to benefit from serving and associating with such friends. I need your company more than you need mine, he would tell us, and he believed it, though we certainly thought otherwise. In him, we found a devotee on whom Sri Ramana Maharishi had showered his grace in full measure. He experienced his living presence both within and without, and like us, had never seen Sri Bhagavan in the body. Bhagavat provided us with an example of how to gain the Master's grace and attain the purpose of human existence in the light of the life and teachings of Sri Ramana Maharishi. Bhagavat was a man who could inspire and mold seekers into genuine devotees. In Sri Bhagavan's ashrama, I have never been able to say anything unless I have realized it first in my own life. Those few who could see into his pure heart had little trouble benefiting from his guidance and love. He was a married man with a son. He would never say, my son, but our son. Because of his sometimes impractical idealist way of life, he regretted that his family had to suffer. When his wife became blind from diabetes, Bhagavat served her with tender kindness and love. During this period, Someone once asked him what he was doing with his wife. He replied with deep feeling, "I serve mother." She predeceased him by 3 years. Few who had met him during the last 10 years of his life could realize his inner state. He would keep silent most of the time, inwardly absorbed. The heart was everything for him. He would often tell us, "Watch wherefrom the breath rises. It is the heart. Watch wherefrom the sound rises. It is the heart. Watch wherefrom the eye rises. It is the heart." Bhagavat loved books that were divinely inspired, but often had much difficulty reading them. Words from these books are like the keys that open the door to the heart. But once the door of the heart is open, what is the need of a key? He once asked. Sometimes he would pick up one of the Maharishi's books or the Tulsidas Ramayana, read a few passages, put down the book, and resume his absorption in the heart. Occasionally, he would call us at odd hours of the night while in ecstatic moods. His desire was to somehow convey it and share with us, but being unable to pull out any words from a mind totally immersed in the ocean of peace and joy, he would remain silent and weep. Only after several minutes of cajoling could we get him to utter a single word. "We will not get calls like this anymore. We will not see the man from the village whose inner luster was hidden from the world by an uncommon simplicity and humility." His intense, unwavering devotion carried him to the heights of inner freedom and joy. Yes, we will not see him again, but what he has given us, his few friends, will not be lost either. He will live with us just as before, and we will strive to continue the work he was inspired to begin right here in the heart of the new world, New York.